We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we have Terry Tucker, who's the author of Sustainable Excellence, 10 Principles to Leading Your Uncommon and Extraordinary Life. Welcome aboard, Terry.
Well, thanks, Richard. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Yeah, you know, it's really a pleasure to have you on the show. I was reading through your book, and, you know, it's not just about excellence, really about purpose. And they do tie together intrinsically, but purpose can change, but excellence doesn't. Tell me about how you came to write the book.
Yeah, I never wanted to write a book, never expected to write a book. You know, there's kind of an old joke that says when we talk to God, it's called prayer. When God talks to us, it's called schizophrenia. So God never said, Terry, write a book. But I think, and this has happened to me, as you can tell, I probably have a very strong faith life, where God has put people in my life and, you know, said, hey, you should write a book. You should write a book. You should write a book. And I'm old enough now, and I think mature enough now that I when those things happen, I pay attention. I perk up. It's like, okay, maybe there's something that I need to do here. So Sustainable Excellence was really a book born out of two conversations I had. One was with a former player. I used to coach girls high school basketball in Texas. And I had one of my players move to the area in Colorado where my wife and I live with her fiance.
Right.
And the four of us had dinner one night. And I remember saying to her after dinner that I was excited that she was living close and I could watch her find and live her purpose. And Richard, she got real quiet for a while. And then she looked at me and she said, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is?
Mm-hmm.
I said, absolutely no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason or the reasons you were put on the face of this earth, using your unique gifts and talents and living that reason. And then the other conversation was with a young man who reached out to me on social media and said, hey, what do you think of the most important things I need to learn, not to just be successful in my job or in my business, but to be successful in life? And I didn't want to give him the, you know, get up early, work hard, help others kind of cliches that we already know. So I took some notes and eventually came up with these 10 principles. And so I sent them to him. And then I stepped back and I was like, I got a life story that fits underneath this principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates that principle. So literally during the 4 to 5 month period where I was healing after I had my leg amputated due to cancer, I sat down and I built stories underneath each of the principles. And that's how the book came to be.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, your point on purpose is a mirror to one that I often make with people as I'm, you know, mentoring, advising, talking. Is, and it's with every one of the teams I build, is everybody has the potential to be amazing at something, but most of us never get the opportunity to discover what that is. And that opportunity is really ties back to our purpose. It's finding our purpose and really embracing it, because often we live out of necessity to first help others and then ourselves. And that's a challenge for a lot of people, because we do have burdens, we have obligations, we do have responsibilities. How do you separate them, or how do you incorporate the two?
I mean, I think small minds and weak people kill big dreams. I agree with you. I think very few people in life ever even think what it means to be great at something purposeful in their life. And there's an entrepreneur by the name of Ed Milet, who was Entrepreneur of the Year in 2023. And he talks about the four types of people in the world. And I love the way, I wish I would have known this when I was younger. He said, the first group are the unmotivated. And he said, that's the vast majority of people you will encounter in your life. The second group he talks about are the motivated, where it's kind of a carrot and stick approach to life. If I do this, I will get that. How low level, but it works for a lot of people to have a successful life. The third group he talks about are the inspirational people. The word inspiration coming from two words, in spirit. So if you're an inspirational person, you move people with your energy. And then the last group he talks about are the aspirational people, where people aspire to be like you. And when I first heard that, I was like, well, do I agree with this? You know, and I think back on my life, and so many people I've met in life just kind of muddle through life. So the way I look at it is, if you have even a little bit of grit in your life, it's amazing how far you can go if you can figure out your purpose and then try to live it.
It is, and it's amazing what we can do once we really define those milestones and goals for ourselves, because, you know, just as in anything, you can't succeed if you don't have goals, and you need milestones along the way to reinforce that you are on that path, but you're making progress. How, you know, as a, you mentioned your background as a coach, coaching is all about that. You become great by practice. How do you set that in? How do you help people understand how to set that in their daily lives?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you do. And one thing you learn in coaching, I think very quickly, if you spend any time in it, is one size does not fit all. You know, to motivate a player, to motivate somebody to do something. I mean, some people you need to yell at. Some people you just need to look at, because they're going to be harder on themselves than anything you're going to do to them. So you have to, it's that nuance of connecting and understanding the people that you're responsible for. What motivates them? Why are they here? What is their purpose? Again, we keep coming back to that word purpose. What is your purpose for being here? Now, I just want to get a PE credit. That's why I'm on the team. Or no, you know, I want to try to make it to the next level. Or I just enjoy the game of basketball and I want to be part of it. Or I want to be on a team with people where I can grow and develop and things like that. So understanding why people, the why, you know, we talk about purpose, I think a lot of times, you know, purpose, why, mission, that they're all together. I'm not so sure they are. I think that the why of why you do your purpose or what your purpose is something you need to figure out before you even figure out what your purpose is.
Correct. And I, you know, you mentioned one thing about how you can look at some or you have to yell at some. One thing that's always fundamental is modeling the behavior yourself. And that's probably one of the most impactful pieces for anybody, because if you don't act it, nobody's going to believe it.
Yeah, you got to walk the walk and talk the talk. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got to be able to do both. And if you don't, you don't have credibility. And, you know, and I think as a leader, you need to set the culture. You need to set the expectations of this entire team, but you have to model that. You're absolutely right. You have to, you know, I mean, if I'm saying one thing, but I'm doing something else, people are going to, you have no credibility whatsoever. But I think the other part of that, especially in a team environment, is you've got to get the team to buy into that. And I remember there was a great story about Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, the basketball coach at Duke University, when he was coaching the Olympic team and, you know, LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, that. And he said he brought Kobe and LeBron and a couple other players together for a meeting. And they're like, oh, coach, we're going to talk about offense and defense. He said, no, we're going to talk about culture. And what he did is he gave them questions. And so when the whole team got together, he said, you know, how do you guys think we should develop this culture? You know, and LeBron raised his hand and said, hey, I think we should make sure that we're always on time. And instead of coach saying, yeah, that's what it's going to be, he looked at the team and said, what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. So he got the team to buy into something that LeBron had suggested. I mean, he sort of greased the skids a little bit, you know, by setting LeBron up. But he got them to, yeah, we should all hold each other accountable for being on time. Things like that. So they developed their culture as Krzyzewski developed the culture, but he got the team to buy in by having the leaders of the team say, this is what I think we should expect.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I've written a book about some of that, and one fundamentally important part is, you know, the leadership can set the culture, can set the direction, can say what they aspire to. They have to exemplify it, you know, but the reality is it only succeeds if the whole organization buys in and holds each other accountable, because you can't have one walking out of step. And, you know, most importantly, my book is about toxicity and dealing with those issues, but it's true in every single area. Now, taking it back a bit, though, again, to purpose. Purpose is something which is self-directed. Nobody can give to you. It's one of the things. A friend of mine, Faith Jones, wrote a book called I Own Me, and she has a TED Talk about that. And that really is, I own myself. I own my purpose. I own the reason that I'm here and why I'm doing this. But purposes can shift in life. Our purpose isn't generally a lifelong quest. It's something which changes. How do you, you know, from a coaching perspective, as you're talking to people, how do you help people go through that? Because effectively then we're setting our goals, but our goals become milestones towards a further goal.
Yeah, you're right. And I, you know, we talk about purpose like it's a singular thing or a singular event in our lives. And I know from my perspective, that word is plural. It's purposes. I think when I was younger, you know, when I was a college athlete, that was my purpose. And then when I got into law enforcement, that was my purpose. And now having cancer, and in all honesty, probably coming towards the end of my life, my purpose has switched again to putting more goodness, positivity, motivation, love back into the world with whatever time I have left. So I think, you know, there's a great line in Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, and I'm going to mess it up a little bit, but he talks about we shouldn't live our life in the abstract, that every one of us has a reason, has a purpose, that we're on the face of this earth, and we need to find that purpose and live it. We almost have a moral responsibility to find our purpose in life and to carry that out. So how do you do that? And I think the first thing you have to do is you've got to start with what your values are in life. What's foundational for you? No matter where society swings on that pendulum, what's not going to move for you? What is so important to you that you know you're anchored in? It's foundational for you. And so many people, Richard, never think about that. They ask them what their values are. They're like, well, I don't know. I don't know what my values are. And it's interesting. I had an interview one time with a package goods company. I interviewed with the senior vice president. And we spent an hour and a half talking about my life from the time I was born, basically the time I graduated from college. And the interview was over. And I stood up and I said, I got to ask you, this is the most interesting interview I've ever had. You never asked me one question about business, about marketing, about the team or anything like that. And he said, you know, Terry, I've got plenty of people around me that'll tell me whether you're a good fit for the team. Incidentally, Richard, I was not offered the job. And he said, what I want is people of value, of people of good character. And I believe character values are developed in the first 20 years of your life. Not that you can't develop them down the road, but that's why I asked you all those questions, growing up, playing basketball, having knee surgery, what was college like, things like that, because I wanted to understand what was foundational for you, what made a difference in your life. And, you know, after I got out of that, I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting, because, you know, if you think about it, that groundwork is like, how important is parenting and coaching and teachers and, you know, faith ministers and things like that in young people's lives to develop and set what's foundational that you can now use to find your purpose in life.
No, and that's a really great point. I mean, I think that's also a difference in how people go about organizing teams and groups around themselves and who they seek out. And, you know, it's been fundamental for me as I've gone through hiring processes. It's funny you made that analogy, because when I've worked and built teams, I've had people who have been doing HR and hiring people, but they always come in for a final interview with me. And I'm not asking about their skills. I'm trying to figure out who they are. Because at the end of the day, the people that they are is what's going to contribute more than their hard skill set to the organization. Because they can do a lot of damage if they're the wrong type of person, but they can make an incredible impact in helping lift everybody around them if they're the right. And it's a personality type, not just a skill set. The skill set can be tested. The rest has to be judged. And judgment isn't a bad thing. It's whether you're an appropriate fit for that group. And so, you know, you said like you didn't get that job. Doesn't mean you were anything bad or wrong. It means that group mix was different than you. And that's actually a fantastic place to be, because it helps both you understand how that fit works and yourself. And it's never a bad thing. It's just, it's actually a really good thing, because it's how do you fit in and how do you meld? And, you know, that cultural thing, though, going back to a piece you were mentioning about it all, is as you look at this, and, you know, you made a point in your book about training and the 40% rule, and that when you think you've hit your maximum, you're only 40% of the way there. That also ties back to your values and beliefs, because values are one thing that people rarely assess, but beliefs are the things that guide them through their daily life. They believe they are this, and sometimes they need to be reset. That's a hard thing for a lot of people to do. But how does that tie back to your 40-60 rule? Because questioning yourself is a huge step.
Yeah, it is. I guess let me tell you another story that kind of dovetails with that 40% rule, which I got from a friend of mine who is a former Navy SEAL. And this is a story that happened back in the 1950s at Johns Hopkins University. It's a rat story. So there's a professor there that was doing an experiment with rats, and he wanted to see how long rats could tread water. And so he put them in a tank of water that was over their head. And the average rat treaded water for about 15 minutes before it sank and drowned. So he put another group in the tank, and he watched them. And just as they were getting ready to sink and drown, he grabbed them, pulled them out, dried them off, and let them rest for a while. And then put the exact same rats in that exact same tank of water. And the second time around, on average, those rats treaded water for 60 hours. Now, think about that. The first time, 15 minutes, it's not like, you know, your business is going to go under or your marriage is going down or you flunk a test. You're going to die. Your life is going to be over. And the second time around, 60 hours, which taught me two things. Number one, the importance of hope in our lives. That if we know we're doing the right thing, maybe not today, maybe not this week, maybe not even this year, but more than likely, nothing's 100%, we're going to get to where we want to be. And the second thing it taught me, and this has been so important to me as a cancer patient, right, is that we all have a breaking point. Don't get me wrong. But I think that breaking point is so much farther down the road. We quit. We give up. We give in because our brains, our mammalian brains, are telling us, hey, this hurts. This is uncomfortable. Knock it off. But we know from marathon runners and things like that, that when they hit that wall, when they get to that point, I still think I can go on. If you can push through that, and they can, you can get almost a second wind and a sort of new lease on life. So hope and being able to know that wherever you hit that wall, it's not an absolute. It's not a maximum where, okay, I'm done. No, you can push through that if you have the will and the belief and the desire to do that. A lot of people don't. A lot of people pop up to that wall and it's like, you know what? Nope, I'm done. I can't get over it, around it, or through it. But the interesting thing about that is we just don't take that. Now we start blaming people. You know, we blame our coach. We blame our parents. We blame our station in life. And I think that's a shame. I mean, when I got cancer, people were like, well, who do you blame? Like, what do you mean? Who do I blame? Well, you got to blame somebody because you got cancer. I don't have to blame anybody. I got cancer. And I'll just move forward with it in my life. But that's my belief system. I think you have to understand, I don't like your values. What is your belief system? What do you think you can accomplish?
Yeah, and our internal strength and assessing that is so key to our success. And as you said, a lot of people never sit back and think, what are their values? A lot of people also never, most people never sit back and assess their beliefs, because they're formed by others when we're growing up.
Yeah.
And they're not right. They're other people's conceptions and reflections of their own issues and challenges that are imparted to us, and we accept them and never learn to question them.
Yeah. Which is a shame, isn't it?
It is. It's a horrible shame, because we're losing our own opportunity to find fulfillment, no matter what that's in, by accepting others' belief of what we are, as opposed to thinking about ourselves independently. That said, that's an important part of finding your purpose and for your potential. How do you help people address that?
You know, I ask them what their beliefs are. What do you believe in? And same thing, what are your values? And I find so many people, you know, kind of looking at you like a deer in headlights. Like, what are you talking about? I don't know what my values are. And so I think the first thing is you've got to determine what your values are. What is foundational in your life? And then what are your beliefs? Do you think you can keep going? I mean, I was told in 2012 that I would be dead in 2 years because of my cancer diagnosis. And I thought, well, you gave me a death sentence. Maybe I can turn that death sentence into a life sentence. That was my belief. Now, I've also seen people where doctors have said, hey, you're going to be dead in 2 years. And Richard, literally on the date of that anniversary, they're dead. They die. They take that as gospel and they never question. And I have, you know, a belief that says, no, that's not going to happen. And I think for at least me, finding those things out in the future that you want to do. I want to see my daughter graduate from high school. I want to walk her down the aisle, you know, on her wedding day. I want to play with my grandchildren. That is incredibly powerful in our own minds to have something to live for. Going back to Viktor Frankl, this great line in the Man's Search for Meaning where he says, once somebody loses the will to live, it's almost impossible to get it back. I never want to lose that will. You know, I want to find that, keep that going. What else can I look forward to in my life? And that's very powerful because our brains control our bodies. It's not right. The other way around.
Yep. Hey, our brains do control our bodies, and our brains can override so much of the pain. And of course, a lot of people, the challenge is confronting those beliefs in the first place because they come out of abuse.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a big area I'm working on is mental health and addressing those beliefs so that you can get to the point of recovery. Having purpose is incredibly important in helping you do so because it gives you the reason beyond just yourself to address those misconceptions and to heal and to allow yourself to reach your potential, to become that powerful person. You know, for somebody, your book's really is excellent as for somebody to read and get some perspective. And the 10 points, you know, that you talk about in different phases and different ways, they're meaningful. When you've spoken to people who've gone through the book and read different things, and what's the biggest single takeaway that people have that they say, this impacted me?
Yeah, it's funny when people do reach out, you know, there's always one of the 10 principles like, man, that's the one that spoke to me, whatever it ended up being. But the one I hear speaks to a lot of people. And the reason I put it in the book is because I've done it in my life and I'm not proud that I've done it. I don't think it's a good way to live. And I believe it's the second principle. And it's this: most people think with their fears and their insecurities instead of using their minds. I hear that from people all the time. It's like, yeah, I've done that. I'm like, yeah, I did that. You know, you want to start a project and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not smart enough, or, you know, maybe I don't have enough information, or what will people think about me if I fail? That's thinking with our fears and our insecurities. That's not thinking with our minds. And whenever I get the opportunity to speak to groups, especially young people, I always tell them, if there's something in your heart, something in your soul that you believe you're supposed to do, but it scares you, go ahead and do it. Because at the end of your life, the things you're going to regret are not going to be those things you did. They're going to be those things you didn't do. By then, it's going to be too late to go back and do them.
Yep. And not discovering those things you really enjoy and love will be the regret.
Yeah.
And, you know, every entrepreneur is faced that dilemma because you see the path ahead of you and see all the potentials for failure. And the whole thing is to keep going and overcome them. And it doesn't mean that every entrepreneur goes through that in the same way, but we all do face it. And it's the entrepreneur's dilemma, but it's also what drives many of us forward is it's a fear of failure, but it's a same thing. It's the desire to overcome in a different way. So, Terry, we are out of time for today, but this has been an excellent discussion. People who want to read your book, what's the best way to find it? And if they want to reach out to you with questions, how should they do so?
Yeah, the book is on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Apple iBooks. You can also reach out to me and get a copy of it on my website. It's motivationalcheck.com.
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us today, Terry.
Thanks for having me on, Richard. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again with you soon. I'm Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.